Hello, everybody. This is Rob Fredette with the podcast HodgePod, and I have a real awesome guest on my show today, and it is Linda Chadwick. She has written a book. It's called On the Road, Your Backstage Pass, All Access Pass, VIP Guest, 1982 to 87, A Texas Groupie's Memoir. I'm glad that she reached out to me, and I'm looking forward to talking to Linda. I am a huge music fan, like millions of us around the world, but she has some nice inside stories, and the book is awesome. I've been reading it since I got it, and Linda, welcome to my podcast. I'm looking forward to talking to you about your book and other things, so thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled.
I'm sure you've been asked this question 1,000 times, so you have vast experience going to concerts and being a groupie. I was, in my younger days, mm-hmm. I remember going to concerts and in the 1980s, but you've seemed to encapsulate it into a book, your experiences. So the first question is, how did you come about getting this book? Because you have some really good stories in there, which I really like. You kind of like inside baseball for rock and roll. So talk about that if you would.
Mm-hmm. Well, throughout my time, I was always really good about keeping notes and journals and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. you know, because I knew someday the old memory would go away, but I'd have all of that written down. And we were contemplating moving to Costa Rica, and I had a huge plastic container completely full of backstage memorabilia, passes, anything you could imagine that you could pick up backstage, mm-hmm. I had it in that box. And I thought to myself, I'm not bringing that to Costa Rica. And I don't want to leave it for my kids to have to deal with after I'm gone. So I thought to myself, I sold all the rock and roll stuff. And with all of the memory box that I had of notes, I talked to my husband and I said, do you mind if I write a book about it and tell the stories, if I, kind of keep it clean a little mm-hmm. bit and not talk yeah. about the naughty details. And which I did, and he hasn't read it. He didn't want to read it, but he knows the story. So, but that's basically how it came about. Is I just decided, I wanted all of these memories to be, remembered for everyone, not just who was there, but for anybody else that's always wanted to have this type of an experience. You know, I give a little insight in the book about how to, how to get backstage, how you can do these things. It's not impossible, it's doable, and you don't have to, be a total naughty girl. You can do it. You can get backstage and you can meet these people. They're not untouchable.
Wow,
that's
interesting. So how many concerts have you been to? In the back of the book, you have all the concerts you've been to, and it's probably a cut in the hundreds. I know that. So I was a concert goer as well in the 80s and 90s. So you've got me beat. But that is quite the list of concerts that you've gone to. So
yeah, every bit of that is like probably half of them are not. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Okay, that aren't written down. But there were certain times that I like to call the beginning was what we call the stoner days, where we didn't care where we sat and we didn't care, if we got backstage. It was cool just to be at the concert, like Rush, Queen, that sort of thing, and just smoke pot and sit up there and get stoned with your buddies, and watch the show. And I'm glad I did, because Queen was like one of the most phenomenal shows I'd ever seen in my life. I remember just sitting there with my mouth agape, just going, this has got to be recorded. This cannot be coming out of these four guys, but it is. But yeah, and then there was that stage where my girlfriend and I, we decided, I think I kind of want to meet these people. I kind of want to, be a part of their life and everything. And then that's when the groupie days started, and it pretty much went on from 1982 to 1987 was when I decided to, kind of get out of the
I got you. No worries.
I don't know what to call it. And then then I got married about 3 years later, and I'm still married.
Well, that's good. That's good that you're still married. That's excellent. So, you know, just thinking about the concerts, you know, back in the 80s, I remember going to see Van Halen, Foreigner, countless bands. And the concert ticket prices back in the 80s were like $14.95, $15.95. And nowadays, you're lucky to get nosebleeds for $200. It's amazing how the ticket prices have, just like skyrocketed to where, you know, you can't even afford it sometimes.
I think that just our age is what tells that story, but I think it's very sad that they make it more about money than they do, you know, the experience of getting these kids to your show. Well, you know, they don't even have stadium shows anymore unless you're like the Rolling Stones or somebody like that. But I've got ticket stubs that were like $7.
$7?
So I may go back a little further than you.
That is, but, man. So when you think about movie stars, star athletes, I'm a big sports fan like a lot of folks. Movie stars, you think of politicians, TV stars. But something about rock stars and rock bands, that's got a different mystique than all those, don't you think?
It's a magnetism, you know, and when you're there and you're experiencing it, it really is something that you're drawn to. It was always musicians for me. You know, I grew up, my brothers were in bands and, you know, they were hippies, you know, and they would trek off to go to these concerts, you know, with backpacks on. And I just thought that the whole scene was just so cool. And I knew that I wanted to be a part of it. Now, granted, I started off a little bit more of a weenie, you know, with the music. Donny Osmond was the love of my life. Okay. I swear to God, if I were to meet him right now at 61 years old, I'd probably pass out. Honestly, my husband makes fun of me so bad because he said, I would love to just see that day if Donny Osmond walked up to you. And I'd be out like a lot.
Donny Osmond.
But, you know, I did the Bay City Rollers, you know, the whole thing. And you know, like I said, I didn't make that connection, you know, that I wanted to meet these people until Aerosmith and Kiss, you know, that's what did it, you know. My mother was actually the one that took me to my first, at 13, took me to my first Aerosmith concert. And, she got to talking to one of the guards and stuff, and she's a mom. She wasn't a groupie or anything. She was a mom. And she ended up working us backstage, and we got to meet Aerosmith. We were back there. We were 13 years old, right in the middle of all of that, and it was just magical. You were walking around. You were smelling the diesel from the tour buses, the limos, you know, and seeing your favorite star roll the window down and, you know, touch your hand. But the highlight, of course, was Steven Tyler. And we had waited and waited, and we thought, oh, my God, we've missed him. You know, how could we have missed Steven? You were falling. So finally the guy says, he goes, go stand by that door right there. He said, I think you're going to be pretty happy. And in a few minutes, here comes Steven Tyler, walked right up to me, put his hand around my neck, pulled me in, and gave me like this huge kiss. And then he kissed my cousin, and he asked us to go with him. 13 years old.
Wow.
And I was like, I didn't know what to say. I was sitting there going, I said, that's my mom. And he goes, okay. So he gets in the car, and he's hanging out the window, and pulls down to where my mother was standing and asked her to go to the hotel with him. And my mother, her response is the greatest response in rock and roll history. She said, you are the ugliest thing I have ever laid eyes on. And he just laughed and just, they drove off. And my cousin and I were like screaming, going, he's not ugly. He's not.
Wow.
13, that was it. I was hooked.
Yeah, I've seen Aerosmith 4 times over the in the 80s and 90s. And
yeah.
In 1991, it was the 10-year anniversary of MTV, and in Boston, they filmed at the Wang Center, if I remember correctly. They did a video shoot for Dream On, and they had an orchestra in the stage there. And Steven Tyler, if you go on YouTube, he comes down off a piano, and he comes down onto the stage. So they were rehearsing this. He came down like 3, 4, 5 times as they were doing it to get it right. And like we were watching him, they were just producing the video, and then all of a sudden they said, "You think we're done?" And they played for like 1 hour and 15 minutes. It was absolutely insane. God. It was insane. But if you go on YouTube, you'll see the video of it. And like everybody back then, I think it was lights or flashlights, but it was pretty awesome. It was like, you think we're done? He goes, "Hell no, we're gonna rock and roll." And then they just let loose, and it was insane. That's probably my most fun experience at a concert. That was just absolutely incredible. So, but yeah, that's a great Aerosmith story.
Blow you away, you know, but then of course Kiss, you know, and the whole like, oh gosh, you know, the fascination with them. We grew up with super posters. Do you remember super
posters? Yeah, I do. The Kiss Army.
Oh gosh, we had them super posters up on our ceilings and everything. And yeah, I mean, we knew that was going to happen eventually, and it did. We were Kiss.
Yeah, they were. Kiss was, it's amazing. Like when you look back, now, I think Steven Tyler's 75. And today, as we're taping, Dickie Betts from the Allman Brothers died. He was 80 when he passed away. So rest in peace, Dickie Betts. But it's amazing, like when our favorite bands or musicians pass away, we still have their music. It's like they're still alive.
I know. I think the worst one for, of course, Daryl from Pantera, because you know he was very, very special to me, and you know a very deep way, you know. And I when that happened, it just took it away from me, and I really had a hard time dealing with that. But you know, just still don't even think he's gone, because he's always on Facebook. I mean, the Facebook people keep him alive, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, and, it's amazing. Yeah,
that was rough. Randy Rhoads, that was rough, because we had met him and partied with him, and was just like Daryl, one of the most genuine people you would ever meet in your life. I mean, total gentleman, Rudy and Randy. Mm-hmm. You know, we were underage at that show. It was Ozzy Osbourne, the Blizzard of Oz tour.
Yep.
And we were underage, and they knew we were underage, so they were very good, you know, very gentlemanlike with us. Mm-hmm. And but we sat on the bus with them for an hour or two, and just the excitement of doing that. And Rudy would take his headphones off, and he'd lean over and put them on me, and he'd play his bass. Mm-hmm. You know, for me. Ooh, you talk about swoon, you know. But it just worked its way up, you know, and all these boys, you know, and I don't know. It was magic. It really was magic.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look back. Like Van Halen's my favorite band of all time, and when Eddie Van Halen passed away, it was like, never met him, but he's like, you lose your part of your family. And I remember when he passed away, it was during the pandemic at that time, and I went out for a walk, and I just played Van Halen 1, and I just listened to all his guitar riffs, you know, during all the songs. It was really, it's amazing. Like, Phil Collins is another one of mine. Phil Collins is like, he and Eddie Van Halen, so they're just like, you know, someday they're going to all pass on, and we still have all their music, and that I think that's what makes it great.
I know it. Yeah. But then you look at the Rolling Stones and you're like, what the heck? You know?
Yeah, they're going out on tour.
I don't think Keith is ever going to stop. I know it.
They've been together 60 years, not 16, 6-0, 60 years.
It's amazing, you know. And what is it? Keith says, you know, I don't drink and I don't smoke no more, you know, and he's still kicking, man. I don't know if they'll ever die.
You know what, though? It's amazing. It's amazing that when they play in their shows, when you see highlights on social media when they're playing at their shows, it's really amazing how the stamina they have for those shows. It's absolutely incredible. Yes. I mean, they're 80 years old. I mean, they're just moving around like they're when they're 40 years old.
I know it. I know. And it's like, you know, you almost afraid for like Mick or something, because he's so small as it is. If he were to take a fall or something, you know, they might be hauling him off with a broke hip. You never know.
Yeah, you met, you had a chance to converse or meet Van Halen back in the day. So talk about that, because I find that to be pretty cool.
Well, yeah, we got to, I think the first concert, you know, that I got to go to, which was theirs. It was, you know, it was, you knew it was a ride that you wanted to be on. Okay. You know, no matter what it was you needed to do, you needed to be on that ride because it was going to be fun. And it was. But we were standing, my two girlfriends and I were standing out in the audience. We hadn't even tried to do any scamming, you know, to get a pass or whatever. We thought, you know, this is just going to be a good show. We want to watch the show. We didn't get to watch the show. The manager, he came over and he had three laminate passes. And he goes, "You girls need to come backstage with me right now." And we were like, okay. So we go and we're following him, you know, and he takes us to this room. This is in the book. Takes us in this room and invites us in. And there's like maybe 10 other girls in there, a variety of different girls. And he shuts the door behind us and leaves us all in there together. And we're sitting there going, you know, what the heck, you know? The opening act came on and they played and we're sitting there going, gosh, you know, I want to go to the show, you know? And then Van Halen came on. And we're, at this time, we're really wondering what's happening, you know? And the floor, which was David Lee Roth's clothing designer at the time, she comes in with her assistants and big boxes of Mexican dresses. You know, the old-fashioned embroidered Mexican dresses. And she said, pick you one out. And she said, and then the ones that don't have one, I'll piece together these others and make dresses for you. So we're thinking, what is this? Why can't we be out there watching? She goes, oh, no, you're going to be a part of the backstage party. And we were like, okay. So she basically sews up all these dresses for us. And when I mean, you know, they were Mexican dresses, but she rips them and, you know, makes, you know, very like a revealing type clothing. My poor girlfriend, she only got two pieces, one tied around her waist and one tied around her boobs. So she was walking around, looked like she was in a bikini, you know. So the party, after the show, the party started and we were taken into this huge room. It was a Mexican themed party. It had a mariachi band playing. It had like three long tables of nothing but every Mexican food you could possibly imagine. And the band, and they were there. And then we just walked around and looked pretty, you know, for everybody to look at, you know. And the guys, you know, they were loving it, and they would come up and pick us up, you know, and put us on their shoulder. And, you know, David would swing us around, you know, which was kind of embarrassing because the skirts were really short. You know, we were like, eek! but yeah, we were part of the party that night with the band, and you know. We were so tired and everything after that was over, you know, they tried to match us up with some of the band members and all, but we didn't want to do, we wanted to go home by that point. We missed the show. Well, yeah, we got to meet the band, but we missed the concert.
What?
You know, trapped in a room with all these women dressed scantily, you know, but they were fun. They were a lot of fun.
So talk,
like I said, you knew it was a ride you wanted to be on because it was a party all the time.
Yeah, you know what made the bands like Van Halen? I mean, they were always good, but like when MTV came out in 1981, it definitely enhanced the appeal of all bands, all music, because the music was great. Now they put it on video, and it's like, wow. Then it's like free, you know, free advertising for the bands. So one band that you have in the book is Poison, and they were big in the late 80s. I remember at my college on the radio station. Poison was playing all the time. So what about Poison? Because Brett Michael, he was on The Apprentice with Donald Trump, if I'm not mistaken, Celebrity Apprentice a few years ago, and he won, yes. If I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And, I think he won it. Yeah, I think he did.
And so what was it like hanging out with Poison? Because they had some great songs on those albums from, you know, the mid-80s or to the 90s.
We met Poison in the very beginning. I mean, the very beginning of their career. They were playing nightclub-type venues. And they were playing this club in Dallas called The Ritz. And my girlfriend and I, we decided, okay, we're going to go check these boys out because, I mean, they were gorgeous, you know, and like the MTV, you know, you watching them and stuff. And so we knew we had to check them out. So we went to the show and we went early because we thought, okay, we're going to try to meet them. So you go early to try to catch them doing their sound check or something like that. Well, the guy at the club, he says, well, they're staying at the little motel right behind the Ritz. Wow. This was not in a very nice area of Dallas, you know. So we're thinking the motel must be pretty bad. So we drive over there and we pull up like to the little office and we get out of the car and we're like, you know, is there a band here that they're staying here? And they all kind of look girlish like, and, you know, or can you tell us what room they are? Well, about that time, I guess they heard us. And here comes all these like pretty boys sticking their head out the door. And they were like, screamed, girls, you know, they were excited to see us, you know? And so they got us and had us come over. We went in their room and we sat around. Brett played guitar for me, or acoustic guitar for me. And, you know, we got to know him real well and everything. And Brett gave me his telephone number so we could stay in touch and stuff. We went to the show, but they were pulling out right after the show. So we didn't get to, you know, spend more time with them after that. But I did stay in touch with Brett. And the next year they came, we had the VIP passes. Next time they toured, I think it was with Rat. But yeah, they made sure we were hooked up. And I remember one of the coolest parts was we were the only girls on the tour bus, and they were signing autographs at the front of the tour bus, and there was this guard like trying to keep the girls from running in the bus, and they kept looking in and seeing us sitting there, you know. So it, you know, that's the mystique of it, is that I think that we're kind of secret groupies, and when I say we groupies, we're kind of seeking out that little bit of fame for ourselves too. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, you want to be a part of it, and you want to be that girl that the other girls see with them. You know, it's a rush, you know, it is.
I believe it.
Yeah. It's a good word to describe it. You know, it's a rush and it's a high, and it, you know, you feel like, if you're somebody like me, and that's the reason that I started the book as early as I did from birth, you know, it's like the doctor slaps your butt and says, oh, it's a groupie, you know. But it was to show you that I was not a real popular girl. I mean, I struggled through my youth pretty rough. And it was, you know, I wasn't the prettiest girl. I wasn't, you know, didn't date, you know, it was like nothing, you know. So your self-esteem, it gets to a certain point, and I think that as a woman, a girl, or whatever, you start seeking out something that makes you feel good about yourself. And they, the rock stars, they accepted me, you know. They pulled me right in, you know, and they accepted me. They loved me. They thought I was, you know, beautiful. And you know, I'd say something like, I know I'm not as pretty as this, you know, whatever, and they'd go, what? You know? And I guess, you know, you look at some of the ones that I dated and that I was with, and, you know, it does make you, your self-esteem build up, you know, and make you feel important, and that you're worthwhile, you know. You don't, just because you had a terrible, you know, youth or whatever, you know, you grew up and you became, you know, somebody that these people really like, you know?
Yeah, you had mentioned Poison. They had played in clubs and they stayed at a hotel. And it's amazing. I'm always fascinated by how bands, when they start off and then they get popularity and then they make the fame, it's all a lot of hard work. They work their butts off.
They really do. And you know, Brett's a diabetic, and, you know, that lifestyle, you know, it really, you know, it took a lot of wear and tear on him. I know the first thing that I seen when I was hanging out with them, and I walked in, and he had a needle, and he had a, like, this thing, and I freaked out because, you know, I may have snorted some cocaine and some speed and stuff like that during the day, but I never got into hard drugs, you know, like needles, that sort of thing. It creeped me out. So the first thing I thought when I seen him doing that was he was doing drugs. And I freaked out, and he was like, no. He said, come here, let me explain. He goes, I'm a diabetic. He said, I've been a juvenile diabetic since I was, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is my insulin. He said, I have to take this, you know. And I was like, oh, well, my God, okay, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I said, I don't like that kind of drugs like that. And he was like, no, he goes, it's cool. But now, you know, he's getting older just like me, you know, and he takes better care of himself now. He's got he wears a thing on his arm and, you know, but Brett's a really nice guy. You know, he did something very special for me. This had been years after I had stopped, you know, being a groupie and all that stuff. I was married and I was working as a manager at a grocery store, and this little girl, she was about 3-4 years old, she kept coming in, and the mother was on my Facebook, so she knew, you know, that I had met Brett and everything. Mm-hmm. But this little girl would come in dressed like Brett, and she would walk up to me and she'd say, Brett's my husband, you know. And I would just laugh, and so you know, I got to thinking, you know, to myself, and the mother had asked me. And so I called Brett. I called his manager first because I didn't want to bother him. And I asked him, I said, can you tell Brett it's me and ask him if he can set something up for this little girl to get to meet him? And Brett was like, oh, my God, yes. You know,
that's
he was
awesome.
Playing at Billy Bob's in Fort Worth, Texas, you know, big nightclub, mm-hmm. Billy Bob's. And, he set it up. She got to go backstage. He took pictures with her. They're the most precious pictures. I wanted to put them in my book, but because, you know, she was underage, mm-hmm. and everything, I didn't want to do that. But she would, like, he gave her a guitar strap. And, I mean, it
That's
was
awesome.
Just amazing. And he did for her, you know. And then he had the manager call me and tell me if he had made me happy by doing that. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
That's awesome.
Thank you. That's another thing. You know, I still know a lot of these people. I still get in touch with a lot of them. That's why I'm very respectful to their lives as well, because most of them are all married and they all have kids just like me, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to be respectful to everybody. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, Poison in the late 80s, they came out with that massive ballad, Every Rose Has Its Thorn. That absolutely shattered. I mean, that just absolutely obliterated the charts. I mean, in a great way. I remember when that song came out, that was just one of the best ones that came out, I think, in the 80s. I really do.
Oh, of course. But I'll tell you something really funny. You'll probably be mad at me, but I got so sick and tired of hearing that song. And we were at Rocklahoma, you know, in Oklahoma. They had that big festival thing they do. It's called Rocklahoma.
Yeah.
And Brett was supposed to be playing at it. And I said, my friend laughed, and she goes, God, you could just see him now with his acoustic guitar flying in on the helicopter singing Every Rose, play, you know, really has its thorn or whatever. And I said, and if I'm lucky, he'll fall out while he's playing where every rose. That's how bad I hated that song. He doesn't really like it to sing it anymore either. You know, that's the funny part. Kind of like Steven Tyler with Dream On. You know, it's like, please don't let me have to sing this song one more time, you know?
Well, you know, another song that Poison did, it was great. It was a cover of Your Mama Don't Dance by a cover of Loggins and Messina. Yes. That song absolutely rocks. I love that song. I'll play that every once in a while. That's a great song. I love it when bands cover other groups or artists from back in the day. I think they pay homage and they do it a respectful way. And I think it definitely brings out a different side of the song that you would hear. But that's that was like a light rock song or a happy song back in the 70s. But they made it into a nice heavy metal song, which I thought was great.
Oh, it was a party song. You know, they were a party band too, just like Van Halen, but in a different way. You know, they were glam. You had that glam stage, you know, which was awesome. You know, we all loved them pretty boys, you know. They wore more makeup than we did and used more hairspray than we did. Poison actually had like cases of Aquanet and wow. things like that they would have on tour. Not unlike Lemmy, he would have cases and cases delivered to the tour bus of Jack Daniels. You know, Jack Daniels or hairspray, which would you rather have?
Well, you got like the inside baseball stuff. I found that to be fascinating. So talk about Guns N' Roses and Alice Cooper. I know you.
Yes, I did. That was the concert where it was MTV's Groupie Special. And they had Sweet Sweet Connie at the concert, which was amazing. And at the time, I was really blonde and I had really curly hair, long. And she was walking and she did a double glance at me. She goes, "Oh my God," she goes, "I thought you were Stevie Nicks at first." And I said, "Oh no." I said, "Oh my God, you're Sweet Connie." And she was like, "Yeah." She's just, just a Southern girl. And boy, she made no bones about it being a Southern girl. But a neat lady. But anyway, yeah, we were brought back again. We were in the audience thinking, this is Alice Cooper. I just want to see him, you know. And here come the manager and brought us backstage with backstage passes. And, we did not get to meet Alice, though, unfortunately, but we did all of his band. We got to meet all of them, and we saw quite a few things that was a little shocking even for us, because there were so many groupies of different ages and different, you know, things mm-hmm. that would happen backstage. I was shocked. I was blushed, okay? And I mean, I was a groupie too, but I was blushed back at that show. But Axl Rose and I did not, we did hit it off, but we didn't hit it off. He pissed me off really bad because we were standing at the out in the audience watching Alice Cooper kind of to the side, you know, and he comes walking from the backstage area, could have walked around us. Nope. He walked right between us and pushed us to the side and walked between us and up in front of us. And I was like, you jerk. You know, that ain't what I called him. I called him something else.
That's okay. We'll keep it clean.
Yeah. So, and he just kind of turned around and grinned, you know, at me. And I was thinking, you know, already, you know, he's already got that big head, you know. And, I didn't realize at the time they were all on heroin pretty bad. But, you know, but then later that night, we had gone to a nightclub to kind of finish out the night and watch the band there. And then they showed up at the club. And they told them they were going to go up on the stage and play a song or two with the band.
Wow.
So he comes walking by me and he stops right in front of me and he goes, "What'd you call me?" And I said, "Just leave me alone." And he just started laughing and he went on back up to the stage and they performed and then they came off stage and they left towards the back. In a few minutes, the manager comes and he goes, "Can you come with me for just a minute?" And I was like, "Okay." I said, what's going on?" He takes me out behind the club, and there's a limo sitting there, and it's him. He said, "You know, Axel wants to talk to you." And I was like, oh, God. You know, so I got down in the car, you know, and I looked at him and I said, what do you want? And he goes, I want you to go to the hotel with me. And I said, I'm not going to the hotel with you. And he goes, can I write down my room number? And I said, you can write it down all you want to. But I said, I'm not going to the hotel with you. And he just laughed and he wrote down his room number and where he was at. And I went home.
Like when you went into the club that night, were people going crazy when they walked in?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Because you know, you knew that was just another band that you just knew was gonna do something really special. You know, Axl was a jerk, you know, but no denying that he had a voice from heaven, you know, and a stage presence that just, you know, you knew that each one of them were going to be something really big. You know, you just knew. Everybody did. It wasn't just me. You know, everybody knew. So getting to see that was really a huge treat, you know. And the band, you know, they were not expecting that. But to have get to jam on stage with Axl Rose and them.
My gosh.
Flash. Yeah, Flash. I mean, oh my gosh. It's just amazing, you know. But we were always in the right places at the right time. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but, you know, we were always known as the girls who did not work for their passes. And I think that most everybody will understand when I say that, what that means. You know, most times you have to do favors to roadies or you have to do things to get passes. We never did, ever. We were in the right places at the right time. We either met the band first and already had our passes before the show, or we knew somebody like a promoter, you know, that. And back in the 80s, when you were looking at stadium tours, there was a quota of how many beautiful girls that you could get to fill your backstage area. You know, it looked good. And so the promoters, you know, they had a, I wouldn't want to call it a quota, but they had a number of how many girls, you know, that they could give passes to. And we were always on the top of the list. They would call us at our apartment and say, you want to go to a show? Oh my God, I'll tell you another story. You're really going to love this one because it's Eddie. And you may have already read it. And, but we, our promoter had called and he knew that I loved John Waite. I was a huge fan. And he said, y'all want to go to the show? And I was like, yeah, of course I do. You know? So my girlfriend and I, we went and it was John Waite and Scandal, okay? You remember mm-hmm. Patti Smith?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and, yeah.
Yes. So we went to the show, and, you know, and we're thinking, okay, Scandal opened up, and we're watching the show. Yeah, it was okay. You know, wasn't no, like rock and roll, you know, but we were having a good time. And then all of a sudden, Eddie Van Halen walks on stage.
What?
And the crowd just goes wild. Well, come to find out, Patti Smith is best friends with Valerie Bertinelli.
Oh my gosh. So wow.
They were on, like going on tour with them a little bit. And then they would jump on stage and jam, or Eddie would.
Wow.
So we're sitting there going, holy crap, you know, now this is getting good, you know? And so the whole time we're standing there, we're talking with this guy. And he's got kinky curly hair and he's really cute and young, you know. Well, we found out that's Valerie's brother, Valerie Bertinelli's brother. I mean,
wow.
Like I said, right time at the right places. So after the show, Patrick, which is her brother, he said, we're going back to the hotel and we're going to have dinner with our parents and Eddie and Valerie. Do y'all want to go? Duh,
yeah. Sign me up.
Yes, of course we'll go, you know, having dinner with the family, you know. And so we went, and, you know, there was another part of the story with John Waite, which that was my fangirl moment, you know, where I did not get to see, you know, John Waite because we left with you know, to go to the hotel with them. So I was very sad because I really wanted to meet him. So we're getting ready and we're going to go up to the restaurant bar to have dinner. And the elevator door opens and it was John Waite.
Whoa!
Right in front. Yeah. And my girlfriend, she's just standing there watching the train wreck. Okay. And I'm just standing there and I couldn't say anything. There was no, it was like a, and he goes, are you okay, darling? You know, and I was like, you know, and he said, well, I have to be going. And he reached over and he, you know, just kind of kissed me on the cheek and walked out. And my girlfriend, God, you look stupid. And I was like, oh my God, it was John Waite. And I couldn't say anything. I said, that was the worst fangirl moment ever. But anyway, so we go up to dinner and we're sitting there at a dinner table with Eddie Van Halen, Valerie,
my
Patrick,
gosh,
and mother and father. And they cuss in front of their mother and father. They use the F-bombs in front of their mother and father. And I told them, I said, if I had ever said the F-bomb in front of my mother, my head would still be spinning right now. I, you know, that you just did not use naughty language in front of your parents, not where I grew up, you know. And they were just like, oh, you know, we're a really open family, and this is just how we are, you know. She's a movie star, and he's a rock star, and blah, 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 just so casual. And I remember sitting there just thinking, this kind of, you know, shit does not happen to regular people, and this is happening to us. It was just, you know.
Oh, man.
You know?
I am so jealous you had dinner with Eddie Van Halen. That is unbelievable. That is sweet. That is sweet. You know,
I was having trouble swallowing, yeah. You know, because I was so nervous. I was just sitting there and I'd take a little bit of food and I'd just go.
If I ever came across his path, I'd probably be fanboy. Eddie, how you doing, Eddie? Eddie, what's up? I'd be doing the same thing, but.
You'd be doing me.
I was, you know, when one thing about Eddie Van Halen, which I think he's one of the most popular rock stars. And the reason why I say that is because he had a warmth about him on camera. He always had a warmth when he did interviews. Yeah. See, he had a connection with the fans. And then when he did the album with Jackson, when he did Beat It, and Van Halen was already in their stride at that time, but Beat It really, I think, introduced him to a new audience. And then shortly thereafter that, 1984 came out. But he just had a warmth about him, like on videos and interviews. Just seemed like an average guy he could talk to, probably have a beer with.
He did. And I think that, you know, you're really lucky. I think that if you have that fame and that fortune and you can still hold on to who you really are, you know, it's a very special thing. Like I said, I you know, there were several throughout, you know, my time, and Lemmy was one. Lemmy Kilmister, mm-hmm. from Motorhead,
yeah,
one of my favorite people. Loved him more than anything. He was just absolutely wonderful. And Randy Rhoads, Daryl Abbott, and Eddie. But yeah, I mean, I could go on. I could probably look at a list and name people. But with every one of those, they're like Alex. You know, Eddie's brother. He was not a friendly person at all. Not at all. But Eddie, just the total difference between the two of them, you know. And speaking of which, have you read the book, his book yet?
It was Brothers. I have not. I got to get it. I want to. People who have fame, I think, I don't know. It's amazing how people who are famous, how their brain works. Always on all the time. And I think when they want downtime, they want downtime. And I think to their defense, I guess they want to have their downtime. But yeah, I don't know how people who are famous, how their mind, like, do they ever get downtime? Do they ever have time where they just like let loose? And I just think that, because they always have to be on. And I think fascinating in that respect. But
it's kind of like movie stars, you know, and rock stars and stuff. I mean, it's you choose, you know, to go into this business, and there's so much that you like you said, you're never really turned off.
No.
You know, you have to be turned on all the time, because you read about it every day, like, oh, this movie star was, you know, really rude in a restaurant. But, you know, these people, these are your fans, the ones that pay for your movies, that, that support you, and the same with CDs and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't be rude to them, you know. I used to do some management and some booking, and that was one of my major rules was I said, if a fan comes up to you, you stop and you talk to them, you know. And these were bands, you know, starting out mm-hmm. and you know, trying to become big or whatever. But that was always one of my rules. And the other rule was is you always stay and watch the other band, support the other band, you know. Don't leave, you know. But yeah, it is hard. And I'm, you know, to, like I said, to be able to hold on to who you are through all of that, that's a very special quality in a person to be able to do that. And, you know, I think that another reason why a lot of these bands and stuff, why the musicians like my girlfriend and I is because it wasn't always about sex or whatever. It was about, you know, just hanging out. You know, and talking, giving them somebody to bounce off of, you know, but like talking to and just, you know, sometimes they, like you said, they just want to be normal, yeah. You know, and so if you're not a screaming girl, you know, and you're just hanging out with them and help them do their laundry or, you know, whatever it is, you know, you're just being normal with them. They really appreciate that.
So I'm looking at some concerts that you've been to, one that really just like, really sticks out to me. Maybe you, hopefully you remember it. June 20th, 1979, Journey and AC/DC. Do you remember that one? Have any yes. recollection of that one? Journey, another great band. Oh my gosh. I was always wanting more after 1986, Raised on Radio. I was always wanting more from Journey.
Yes. Oh, you know that, you know, they were one of my favorites, you know, and a little bit of a story in that, but the, you know, and I talked about it when I was younger. I had back surgery. I had scoliosis, really bad, and I had back surgery, and you know, had to go through the whole thing. I don't know if you know anything about it. They attach a steel mm-hmm. rod to your spine, and you know, you're in a body cast for 9 months. You know, I'm a literal body cast from hip to here. You know, and so the whole thing was. They came out with this song called Walks Like a Lady.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, I just, you know, I was young and I thought, oh, you know, they wrote that song about me because, you know, I think that's my song because now I'm walking like a lady. I could walk like a lady now. I wasn't all crooked and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. And so I wrote them a letter and I told them, you know, that I loved the song. And I said, and it helped me get through a very hard time and everything. And they dedicated the song to me at that concert.
What?
They said, there's a fan here named Linda, and we just wanted this song to go out her because she's walking like a lady now.
That's awesome.
And I'm sitting there in the audience with my, like, high school girlfriend.
That's me!
And we're just sitting here, and I just kind of went, you know, I don't even want to scream, because I literally screamed at the top of my lungs. They probably heard me. But, you know, but yeah, just to say that, you know, she's walking like a lady now. You know, and I was just like,
That's an awesome story. That's fascinating.
Yeah, weird, like I said, weird things always happen. I think it was just destined that I was a part of the rock and roll world for the time that I was, you know, and I'm so glad that I was. But my intentions were never to snag me a rock star, you know, and mm-hmm. marry one like a lot of girls do and stuff. That was never my intention. My intention was just to go and party and have a good time. And when I was done, you know, and I had decided to walk away from that life, I told myself, you know, it's time to walk away. But I did not want to marry a rock star. I wanted to marry a normal dude, you know, because I didn't want to be that girl sitting at home knowing, you know, what we did, you know, and she's sitting at home, you know, and I didn't want to be that girl sitting at home knowing that he's out there doing some of the stuff he's doing and then come home to me. That just never gelled to me. I'm a pretty old fashioned girl. I know it's hard to say when you're a groupie, but I was really, I held on to a lot of like my old fashioned views. So I'll be happy to let you know I did not marry a rock star. I married a normal guy.
Excellent.
That does not play a guitar and does not sing. Thank God.
Well, I love music. Couldn't tell you what a note is. I couldn't play. I don't know what a chord is. I don't know what a melody, but I do know one thing. I do know I love music when I hear it, and it's absolutely spectacular. Yes. So we'll be wrapping up in a few minutes, but really enjoyed this conversation. So what's it like?
Me too.
When you talk about you were on the bus there, really made me think about it. When you were on that bus and the other women were trying to get on, you must have been like, in your mind, like, I'm in here and you're not.
maybe just need a bit. I wanted to make sure they saw me.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, you want to make sure that they saw you. Yeah, you wanted to be seen. I know exactly. That's perfect. That's perfect. And they were probably like looking at you, like snarling at you. I bet, right?
Yeah. You'd get a lot of that. You know, you'd get a lot of the snarls. But you know, I was always pretty cool to all the other girls and stuff because I knew someday, you know, I was going to be walking away from it, and those girls that saw me sitting on the bus would probably be the ones sitting on the bus after me, you know.
So when you had a backstage pass, did you ever watch a concert from like backstage versus sitting in the seats? And what's that like watching, if you did, from backstage?
Totally cool. Wow. It's a total rush. I mean, you know, and an audience is always watching you too, you know, because like Gene Simmons would set us up like on an amplifier, you know, just pretty close, you know, in a White Snake, we were on stage. Deep Purple, they put us on the monitor stand, the one out in the audience, you know, the one that sits up above the crowd. And they set us up there in chairs so we could see the show.
Really? Man, oh man.
Yeah. 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 I had to call my brother about that one. I was like, guess who I met and partied with last night? Deep Purple, because I think he had gone to a festival one time to see Deep Purple, you know, so I had to brag about that.
great band. Great band.
Quiet Riot, White Snake, and Helix. We were kind of on tour with them for several shows, and we were on stage every night with them. On set, you know, watching this show from on the stage, it was, you need to read the Quiet Riot story. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, they were a Quiet Riot, Bang Your Head. I remember when that song came out in the 80s on MTV. That song rocks. Yes. That song is like, I always get, I'm a big 80s fan. I love 80s music. Listen to. I think it's the best decade of music, but that's just me. That's my biased opinion. One of my favorite songs from Deep Purple is Call of the Wild. You don't ever hear that one on the radio anymore, but I love...
No, that must have been B-side.
Yeah.
Was that on a B-side?
Yeah, so yeah. I think Call of the Wild.
B-side.
Yeah, so I thought that was good.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Listen to the B-side.
Well, yeah, it's funny because, you know, about, you know, Tom Petty, you know, he has so many great songs that were like top 10 hits. But if you listen to his B-side songs, they're just as good as the hits. It's amazing how Tom Petty has such great music that they just never play in the radio.
You know the Queen movie where they're arguing about the car dude. What was the name of that song that Roger wrote? And it was about the car. I'm in love with my car. Do you remember the scene?
I didn't see the movie. I'll have to watch the movie. I didn't see that movie.
They didn't want it on the album because they thought it was stupid. And he was like, it's not stupid, but it's a good scene. But I think they B-sided it. You know? But it's a great song.
So you have a diverse music taste as far as rock and roll. What are some go-to songs you have, like if you're having a bad day, what song or maybe two songs that will put you in the right mood if you had to get that mood changed? If you're having a bad day, what song will turn it around and make it better?
Well, I mean, there's so many. Picking like a one song would be absolutely impossible to do, but I could tell you what band I would lean to go for that song. It would be something by Aerosmith, because, I mean, it's Aerosmith. Queensryche. I loved Queensryche. I thought they were an underrated band. I thought they should have been much more highly rated. And probably the Beatles.
Yeah,
the Beatles. I mean, like I said, finding one specific song is like really hard because there's just so many, you know. And but their that genre is like that would definitely be one of their songs. I don't ever get down.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying down, but like if you're having like a grinding day and the day it needs to turn around, I have Genesis, Genesis Misunderstanding. That's the song for me. Anything from Van Halen or anything from REM. Those are the three bands that will get my mood turned around quickly. Oh, yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. REM was great. They had great songs. So, yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's a good question. I'd have to really sit down to actually come up with a song. Let's see. What is that? Silent Lucidity.
Yeah, Queensryche.
I listen to that song. Oh, my gosh. I go off in a meditation when I hear that song. It's amazing. So.
Yeah, I remember that song. My brother loved that song. I had other friends up in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. They could sing the lyrics to that song. I was a Queensryche fan, but the Queensryche was a smoking band. They were just like incredible, incredible.
I thought so too. And you know, and then like you'd look at somebody like a Dave Mustaine. I mean, he always had like these rebellious songs, made you just want to go, yeah, you know. Anthrax, you know, that's another one. You know, Motorhead, Love Malemi, so.
Well, Linda Chadwick has been on my podcast tonight, and I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. She's the author of On the Road, Your Backstage Pass, All Access Pass, VIP Guest, 1982 to 1987, a Texas Groupies memoir. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you about some of your unbelievable stories of the bands. I was just like blown away by you. It's just amazing. You have like these intricate details of going backstage, which I...
You know, Robert, one thing that I like to say to people, I mean, my book may not be like everybody else's books, because I don't really consider myself a writer. I consider myself a storyteller.
You did it.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for noticing it. Thank you. I'm not a writer. I mean, I would love to be like this, you know, super... you know, Stephen King-ish writer or whatever, but I'm more of a storyteller, and that's what I pride myself on, you know, is just telling the stories.
You know, when you read the book, like I've read some chapters here, you feel like you're in backstage with Linda with some of the, but I think, how was the reception been on the book?
It's so far, I mean, so good, but we're kind of waiting because we're not going to hear the exact number until July. So, I mean, if you don't mind, I'm going to plug. Please go to Amazon.com. They've got it on Kindle. They've got it. You can buy the book, Barnes & Noble. A friend even emailed me that she said, Linda, you're on Walmart.com. So you can actually pull me up on Walmart.com. I thought they'd ban it, you know, but no, they didn't. I'm on Walmart.com now, so I must have really made it big.
Amazon, Walmart.com. That is tremendous. Linda, I want to thank you very much for your time. I thoroughly enjoy talking to you, and maybe you can come back another time. I would love to talk more rock and roll and stuff like that with you.
I would love it, Robert. I have enjoyed this so much.